Now we're holding on Mem Gimel Amr Aleph at the top, at the first Mishnah. Mishnah says, Hamafkid Mois Eitzel Shulchani. If a person deposits money by a Shulchani, by a money changer who constantly has a need for coins, Im Tsurin, if the money is tied up in a bundle, Lo Yishtamish Behen, then the Shulchani, the money changer, is not allowed to use that money. Like this, in other words, you could figure maybe he let him use the money, and then eventually when the guy comes back, then he'll give him back an equivalent number of coins. But no, since he tied it up like that in a bundle, then it shows he doesn't want him to use them, as we'll see in the Gemara. Lefichachim ogdu, therefore if that money is lost or otherwise becomes unavailable, ein chay b'achriyosan, then he's not chayav on the achrayus, meaning, in other words, he remains a shem b'chinam or a shem b'sachar. He remains with whatever usual rules he would have been, where he's potter. In the case of a shem b'chinam, he's potter from gnev v'aveda, and in the case of a shem b'sachar, he's potter from einsim. On the other hand, mutarin, but if the money is unbundled, yishtamish behen, then that's as much as to say that the shochani is being given permission to use them, lofichach, and therefore, because he's allowed to use them, im ovdu, if that money is lost, chayeh b'achru yosan, then he's still responsible to pay for it. Meaning, in other words, in effect, he becomes like a shoyl. And a shoyl is chayeh for everything. That's all those distinctions are when he deposited it by a shulchan. On the other hand, Eitzel Balabayas, but if he deposited it by a regular Balabayas, who doesn't have as much need on an ongoing basis for coins, then Ben Surin, Ben Mutarin, whether they're bundled or unbundled, Lo Yishtamish Behen, either way, as a Balabayas, he's not allowed to use them, Lefichachim Avdu, and Chai Bachriyosan, and therefore, again, if they get lost, then he's not chayav b'achru yosan because he doesn't have the dinim of a shoyl. He retains the dinim of a shem chinam or a shem asam. The Mishnah finishes off, chen v'nik balabayis divir ameir. Now, we talk about a money changer on the one hand who constantly has a need for coins. On the other hand, we talk about a balabayis who doesn't use coins very often. Back then, a lot of their business didn't necessarily involve coins. A lot of their business would involve bartering. I have wheat, you have something else, we'll trade my wheat for you something else, chalifin, which we're going to talk about in detail in the next panel. So now, what about a storekeeper? A storekeeper is someplace in between. He needs coins, but not necessarily as often as a shulchani. So, chenvenik, a balabayas, divir Meir. The mayor says that a storekeeper would have the din for that purpose of a balabayas. So he also would not be allowed to use the money, even if it's unbundled. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a chenvenik, a shulchani, and Rabbi Yehuda says that a storekeeper would be like a money changer, because sometimes he does need to be able to make change and to be able to use money. So therefore, if it's unbundled, then it would mean that the owner gave him permission to use, in effect, gave him permission to use the money. Nowadays, by the way, posts can talk about that. Maybe that distinction doesn't necessarily follow anymore. Nowadays, it's much more common. Even regular people, even not shulchanis, need money all the time, because we don't really do much business with barter anymore. Most of our business does in fact use coins. So the Mordechai already writes, one of the middle Rishonim writes, and then the Noisa Kalim on Shulchan Aruch bring it, that nowadays everybody is considered like a shulchani, and therefore they'd be allowed to use the money and chay b'achriyosan. Actually, the Moshe then goes and says that maybe the din has changed yet further. Back when we said, we learned yesterday, Ksafim Enlam Shmira El Bakarka, the primary way, the only valid way to guard coins is by burying them in the ground. So then you could argue there's a certain advantage to both sides of not having to do that and instead being able to use the money and pay back afterwards. The Chenveni or the Shulchani or whatever will be able to use the money and then we'll be able to use the money, and the other one has now the shomer is chayiv and the achrayus and everything. Nowadays, the best way involves depositing it in the bank, and there's no tucha involved in that. So in fact, it's better for the owner; he gets interest from it being deposited in the bank. So Rabbi Moshe learns that actually the shomer would not be able to use it for his purposes at all. He writes on this, he says this is a great svara, even though there's no clear proof for it. So according to that, then the difference is the dinim of whether you are or aren't allowed to use it is actually going to depend on the circumstances at the time, on what people usually do with money at a certain time and place. Okay, so the Gemara starts off with the first din of the Mishnah, where we said that if the money is bundled up, then even if he's a shochani, he's not allowed to use the money. The question is, so you're telling me because the money is bundled, he's not allowed to use it? What's the logic? it's one thing. In other words, what's the difference? It's normal enough to bundle up your money, Rashi explains. So we shouldn't say that only when it's unbundled doesn't mean that he can use it. And if it's bundled, then it means if it's tied up in a bundle, and dafka means he can't use it. No, it's a normal thing to tie up your money in a bundle. The answer is, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yehuda, b'tzrurin b'chassum in Shanu. Our Mishnah is talking about not just where it's tied up in a bundle, but also where that bundle is sealed with a seal. So that demonstrates, therefore, that he in fact does not want to, that he does not want him to use it. Whether that means then, so what would happen, whether then Mutarin of our Mishnah means that it is completely unbundled, and that's the only case where Balabais would be able to, and that's the only case then where he would be able to use it. So you have, there is discussion among Rishonim about that. If it's tied, then he would be allowed to use it, unless, as we're saying over here, that they're chasumin, that they're sealed as well. Ramari Omer, Bekesha Mishona, and Ramari says we're talking about that it could even be where it wasn't sealed, but the knot itself is an unusual knot. So therefore, that also shows that he doesn't want to, that he doesn't want him to untie it and use it. Ikadamri, another version is Boy Ramari. Another version is Ramari did not say that as a statement, but rather asked a question. Kesha Mashona Mai, what would happen if he tied up an unusual knot? Is that enough to show that he doesn't want the Shomer to use the money, or does it not matter unless it's actually sealed? And according to that version, Teiku, then we're not sure whether he can use it or not. But it would come out, in other words, some mutarim would mean, in other words, where it's completely unbundled, and therefore, so it would mean that Balabais, then even if the money is completely unbundled, even if it's loose, he wouldn't be allowed to use it. That's how the Lacha Mishnah understands that. On the other hand, the Lacha Mishnah also discusses that the tour may hold differently and says that, that if it's completely unbundled, then even a balabais would be allowed to use it. Only when it's tied up in a bundle, only then would we say that a balabais is not allowed to use it, and a shochani would be allowed to use it unless it's sealed with a seal, or possibly when it's tied with an unusual knot. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Mutarin Yishtamish Behen Chola, we said if the money is unbundled, then he is allowed to use it. The shochani, and therefore he's chayabach, we'll say he's responsible for anything that happens to the money, because now in effect he becomes a shoyl. So Rav Huna says that would mean, since he becomes a shoyl, then it means that he's chayab for everything, even if there was an onus, that the money was lost. And even Rashi says, Rav Huna means, even if he didn't actually use the money yet, as soon as he got the money, and is able to use it, then that already makes him a shoyl on that money. And like any shoyl, he's chayav b'achul yosei. So the Gemara says, "Va avdu katani." What do you mean, though? The Mishnah said avdu, which implied that they were lost with some kind of avoidable loss, not that it was an onus where it was unavoidable. And the answer is kederaba. We can say the word avdu means the way Rabba explains it, as we learned in the previous parak, and as we're going to learn in the next parak. We had a case over there involving where people sent their matzah shekel from a certain city with a shliach to the Beis Mikdash, and something happened with the money on the way. So we talk about when the shliach has to repay versus when he can swear like a shomer and be potter. And the Mishnah mentions the Nignavu or Ovdu, and Rabba says to explain an issue that we have with understanding that it means regular Gneva Vaveda. Because then that would imply that he's a shomer chinam, and later on, in the next parak, we're going to deal with the implication seems to be that he's a shomer sachar. So Rabbi explains, nignavu means belisted mizuyan. The word nignavu doesn't just mean that it was stolen in the normal way, it means that it was an armed robber who stole them, which is considered an onus. And and Ovdu, and when we say Ovdu, we don't just mean that they were lost in the normal way. It means Shatova Sfinasa Begam, means the ship that was, the boat that was carrying the money sank in the ocean. So in other words, the word Ovdu sometimes can mean an Aveda Ba'unas. So the same thing, Rav Huna is going to say that in our Mishnah, when it says that Ovdu is Chayav, it means Ovdu with an Oinas. So as Mara said, so that's Rav Huna's opinion. On the other hand, Rav Nachman Amar Nensu Loy. On the other hand, Rav Nachman says, if there was an Oinas, then not. We're not going to be Machayav him for that. We're not going to consider him to that extent to be a Shoyl. You're saying that if there was an onus that happened to this money, he would be potter. Which means, in other words, you're saying that he's not considered a shoyl on the money. So what is he considered? A shoyl masocher then? Where shoyl masocher is chayev for aveda but potter for insin. If he's not a shoyl, how could he be a shoyl masocher? If you're going to say, in other words, the fact that he's able to use the money does not yet make him a shoyl, then why would he be a shoyl masocher yet either? The fact is, he starts out as a shoyl machinam, but he's not actually getting paid. If you want to say because he's able to use them, well, then in that case he should be a shoyl. So why are you're making him like a shoyl masocher? It means that you seem to be, in other words, that you're going someplace in between over here. But so it's one or the other. Either he's got to be a shoyl machinam like he was originally, or he's got to be a shoyl because he can use the money. But there's no middle ground there for him to be a shoyl masocher. Amalei, so Rav Nachman says, "Bahamay dinalach." I do agree that yes, he is a shrem asafar dehoyel v'nena because he has a hana that he could use the money anytime he wants. Therefore, mahana. Therefore, that gives him a certain hana, and therefore that makes him so therefore that's considered to be that now he's a shrem asafar. Now he's willing because he has that ability to use it. Therefore, he's mahana the owner and says, you know what, I'm willing to take on the responsibility of a shrem asafar. Bahu hana the misrami lezvina de isper avacha. Because he has the hana that if he were to get a hold of a business deal that he could use the money right away and gain a profit zovan bahu and he would use that money to buy that thing havi alayu shem asachar, for that he becomes a shem asachar. So therefore, Rav Nachman says that's the word why he becomes a shemesacher. So you're asking Rava why it is that he can be a shemesacher. As a matter of fact, it's true. I do agree. Don't think that I'm saying that until he uses the money, he's still considered a shemachinam. No, he actually goes through three stages. When he first receives the money, he's a shemachinam. But then right away he gets upgraded to shemesacher because he would be able to use the money because he discovers that the money is in fact not bundled up or it's not tied up with an unusual knot or a seal like we said before, and therefore he's allowed to use it. At that point he becomes a shemesacher because he's saying to himself, you know what, this guy gave me an advantage that he made the money available to me for me to use. Therefore I'm willing to give him, therefore I'm willing to give something to him and accept the responsibilities of a shoyl masocher to be chayiv for gneiva v'aveda, but only when he actually uses the money is he a shoyl. The smeh brings on this in Shulchan Aruch that actually what it is on the other hand, you have to consider he may not be so certain he wants to use the money in case the owner comes all of a sudden and wants the money back. So therefore, that's why we can't consider him a shoyl until he actually uses it. The regular shoyl, as soon as he borrows something, as soon as you borrow something, you right away are going to start using it. But over here, he's going to be wary about whether he should use it or not until because the owner may come back at any time and then he needs to come up with the cash right away. So therefore, Rav Nachman is saying, because of that, in that interim stage, until he actually starts using it, you can't consider him a shoyl, but you can consider him a shemesacher. So the Gemara says, Eisvei Rav Nachman Rav Huna. So Rav Nachman, in turn, says to Rav Huna, you're telling me, Rav Huna, that he is considered a shoyl right from the beginning, as opposed to me, says Rav Nachman, where I hold he's only a shemesacher until he starts using the money. We learn in a Braisa, Hamafkid Mois Eitzel Shulchani. Now here you have a din as far as a gizbar who is depositing money of Hektish for safekeeping by somebody else. Now you can have a case where the gizbar doesn't realize that this money belongs to Hektish and he thinks it's his own private money that he's doing. So you have similar dinim to our Mishnah. So he deposited it by a Shulchani who regularly needs coins for his business. If the money is bundled up, then the Shulchani is allowed to use them. Is not allowed to use them, similar to our Mishnah. And again, we have to say that means like in our Mishnah where it was sealed or maybe where it was tied with an unusual knot. Therefore, if the Shulchani does end up spending the money and thereby committing Me'ilah, then the Gizbar has not committed Me'ilah. As we've learned before, or we learned in particular in Masechta Kiddushin, when it comes to Me'ilah, you do say yes shliach l'dvar avera, even though in most mitzvahs in the Torah, we learned about this in Bava Kamma as well, most mitzvahs in the Torah, you say ein shliach l'dvar avera, that if Reuven tells Shimon to do a certain avera, and Shimon goes and does it, then Shimon is the one responsible, is the one liable to punishment, not Reuven. But Me'ilah is one of those exceptions where at Tvicho Mechira we learned as far as selling a stolen animal is another one. Only if the Shliach does exactly what the Meshaleach told him, only then is the Meshaleach Chayav. Here, the Meshaleach, the Gizbar, gave him the money, but he gave it to him bundled up and finally doesn't want him to use it. So when the Shulchani goes and uses the money, it's all on his own, and therefore he's the one who'd be Chayav.
How do you reconcile the fact that this shliach is not bar avera with kiras choshis? Everyone has kiras choshis, whether we're a shliach or not.
Everyone has a what?
A bchira.
Of course, everyone has a bchira. Usually, we say divra rab divra. Usually, the idea behind ein shliach and bar avera is divra rab divra tama divra nishoyin. We say Hashem told you not to do something. I'm telling you to do something. Who are you supposed to listen to? Obviously, Hashem. When it comes to Me'ilah, though, when it comes to Me'ilah and Tvicho Mechira, we learned in Kiddushin and we learned in Baba Kama, there were limudim from Sukkim, that those are an exception to the rule, and there we say there is Shliach Lidvar Avera. So yes, the guy has Bechira Chavshis, but nevertheless, since you sent him to shecht or sell the animal that was stolen, or since you sent him to commit Me'ilah, we learned from Sukkim that in those cases, we say that the guy had volition, but nevertheless, you're the one. You, the Meshaleach, are the one who's chayiv. In the case of Me'ilah, really, in particular, in general, when we talk about Me'ilah, we're usually talking about b'shoyvig, because that's when you would have the dinim of keren b'choymesh and bringing a korban asher. When a person commits Me'ilah b'mezid, then it's not really as interesting to talk about, because then it's just like any other lav, he gets malchus, so there's less to talk about if it was b'mezid. Here we're talking about it was b'shoyvig. And therefore, so after all, you can't say divrei rab divrei tama divrei mishoyim. Because what do you mean? I didn't know the rab said not to use this money. I didn't know it was hektish in the first place. In this case, really, we're saying, in our case, we're saying over here, even the gizbo didn't realize. He himself didn't realize at first when he gave the money for safekeeping that it was hektish.
Mm-hmm. So it's only in the case of shogeg, not in the case of mezid.
So all these cases, whenever we, almost always, 99% of the time in the Gemara, when we talk about the dinim of Me'ilah, we're talking about when it was b'shogeg. Because if it was b'mezid, then there's really much less to talk about. Then it's just a matter of malchus, and that's that. Yeah. Okay. So again, here, the gizbar mistakenly gave money for safekeeping to somebody, but he gave it to him tsurin and gave it to him bundled up in a way that therefore demonstrates he doesn't want him to use it. So therefore, even if the guy is a shulchani, he's not allowed to use the money. Therefore, if he did spend the money, which is against what the Meshaleach told him in effect, loy ma'ala gizbar, then the gizbar is not committed me'ilah because the shulchani who committed the me'ilah, because he did it on his own. On the other hand, the immutarin, but the braisa continues, if the money is unbundled, yishtamash behem, and that implies the shulchani is allowed to use the money, lefichachim pavitzi, therefore if he spends the money, ma'ala gizbar, then the gizbar is committed me'ilah, because then again, it's as if he gave him permission, and by me'ilah we do say, yesh shliach l'dvarabe. So now, says Rav Nachman to Rav Huna, so you, Rav Huna, are telling me that once the money is deposited, then already he's considered a shoyl because he has the ability to use it, So Rav Nachman tells him, if you're going to tell me that in a case like that with a shulchani, even when there's an onus, he has to pay. So in other words, he becomes a shoyel right away. My Ilya Hoitzi. So what's the difference? Why does the Braisa have to say only if he spent the money? I feel lo hoitzi nami, even if he didn't actually spend it. Because in effect, then that would mean that the gizbar lent the money to this guy. And when you lend it, if you lent him money, then immediately he took it out of the reshus of hektish. So it shouldn't require that the second party actually goes and spends the money. And as soon as he lent him the money, and you're telling me that he becomes a shoyel, then right away he should become chayev. Meilor, Rav Nachman says, according to me, that he only becomes chayev b'achor yosa only when he actually spends the money. Okay, so in that case, when he spent it, is now what he's causing a change to the status of it. Till now, it was considered in the reshus of hektish, and now it changes, and now it becomes in his reshus and his chayev b'achor yosa. But according to you, Rav Huna, what's the difference? Rav Huna answers back. Actually, who adin afagav the loyhavit? See, no, because the braisa may well mean that even if the shulchani didn't spend the money yet, he would already be chayev for me'ila. But I did tonu reisha hoitzi because in the reisha of that braisa, it mentions where the shulchani spent the money, and it has to say that because when he gave it to him bundled up, until he spends it, then you don't actually have any, there's no me'ila in the first place. So therefore, you could say tana sefer nami hoitzi. So you could say in the sefer, it also uses the word hoitzi, even though in fact, and in the ratio, the point is, Rashi points out, even if he did spend it, nevertheless, the gizbar is never chayev, because again, he gave it to him bundled, implying that he didn't want him to use it. So therefore, the opponent says, so the sefer, you're right, has less of a chiddush. It says the word hoitzi, but in fact, it would apply whether he spent it or not. Either way, I would say, once he gave it to him, and with permission to use it, then already he becomes a shoyel. Whereas again, Rav Nachman is saying that he doesn't become a shoyel until he actually starts spending it. The halacha in dinim mominus is usually like Rav Nachman, and so it is over here that only when he uses it, then only then does he become chayev. And we have the point that the smeh made that we said, because after all, he's not like a regular shoyel, because a regular shoyel has no hesitation in using it right away, whereas over here he is hesitant to use it because the owner may come back short term, and then he needs to have the money on hand. Okay, Mishnah says hashivayach yad bekodin. So now this Mishnah and the next Mishnah are going to talk about the din of shlichus yad. We've touched on in the parak before that when a person has a pikodin, whatever kind of shomer he is, there's a din in the Torah called shlichus yad. If he misuses that pikodin for his own purposes, then now he becomes an effective gazlan on it, and now he's chayev for anything that happens to it. Even though, let's say, before he would have been a shomer chinam and potter for gnev of aveda, let alone oinsin, but now that he did shlichus yad, then he's chayev for all of those things. So the Mishnah says, "Ashleich yad b'pikodin." If a person does shlichus yad, he misuses the pikodin for his own purposes. Beshamai says he gets penalized in the lesser amount or in the greater amount. Meaning, in other words, that we always figure what the highest value was. During the time when he was watching it, and then he's going to pay that. So in other words, chaser would mean, in other words, if from when he did shlichus yad until when it comes to repaying the owner, if it went down in value, he's going to have to pay the larger amount that it was worth at the time of shlichus yad, because that's when he was goizel it. You have a concept that we learned in Bava Kama, Tola Gazlon and Mishalman Tishas Egzela, that a gazlon pays according to the value of what it was worth when it was stolen. And the other way around, if it still exists, Rashi points out, then fine, he could say Harei Shalach Leponecha, as we learned in Bava Kama, so then he can say that you take it back as it is. But Uvi Yeser means if after Shlichus Yad it became worth more, then later on he went and spent it and it's no longer available, then he's going to have to pay the higher value. Then we're not going to say Kol HaGazlon and Mishalman Pachas Egzela. Mishalman says you're going to make him pay the higher value that it went up to. Rish Hillel says you go according to when he spent it or used it up or whatever and made it unavailable to return. So Rish Hillel would say, in other words, so the Gemara is going to explain why Rish Hillel is going to say it. What does B'shas HaTzah mean? Rabbi Akiva and Kishas HaTviyah. Rabbi Akiva has a third opinion that he pays according to the time when the other guy takes him to Beis Din and demands for him to repay. And the Gemara is going to explain why Rabbi Akiva would hold that. But then Chalal, by the way, when we find a machlokas with Shama Beis Hillel, and then another Tana, it means, in other words, the other Tana, either he holds that the Shama and Beis Hillel didn't argue about this in the first place, and they all held according to his opinion, or he holds that Beis Hillel held according to the way he's saying. So here, either Rabbi Akiva is saying that the Shama and Beis Hillel didn't argue about this, or he's saying that Beis Shammai does say Yoka Machoser of Yeser, but Beis Hillel does not say, as you, Tanakama, had the version that he pays Kishasa Hitzah, but rather Kishasa Tviyah. Okay. So the Gemara starts off with some background, and then we're going to relate that to our Mishnah. Omer Rabba, Haiman de Gozo Chavisa de Chamra Michagwe. If a person stole a barrel of wine from somebody else, and now let's say, so now, we're talking about that the barrel is no longer available to return. So the question is, what happens here? First of all, let's assume Me'ikra Shavya Zuza, when he first stole it, it was worth one zuz, Vahashta Shavya Arba. And now, by the time it became unavailable to return anymore, now it's worth four. So does he have to pay one or four? So Rabba says it depends. Tavra Ishasya, if he broke the barrel or drank it, Mishalom Abba, then he's going to have to pay four. It's by Mimela, but if it broke on its own, if it broke because of something not with him, where he broke it, Mishalom Zuza, then he would pay only a Zuz. Now, why is that? Explains Rabba. My timer. So why is that? It's like this. De'i Issa. If the barrel still existed intact, Hodra Lamora Be'ena, then we return to the owner as it was. Because as we learned in Bava Kama, whenever you have the original Gzela still exists, then he can say, Harei Shalach Lefanecha, here it is back to you. And then there wouldn't be anything to talk about in terms of him paying one zuz or four zuz. He would just give the barrel back itself. So therefore, says Rabba, we have to consider, when he breaks it, or when he drinks it, then really, he shaited to kashasi lei, or to katavala, then it comes out really at the time when he drank it, or at the time when he broke it, is really when he's accomplishing the stealing from the owner. In other words, in effect, Rabba is saying he stole it from the owner twice. Once when he first took it out of his, house or wherever it was in the first place, and a second time now when he's drinking it or breaking it. Because the first time makes it, but now the owner doesn't have it accessible to him anymore. And the second time makes it, but now it's impossible to return that actual barrel. So therefore, Utnan, now we learned in Bava Kama, Kol HaGazlonim Mesham and Kishas HaGzela, that all Gazlonim pay as the thing was worth at the time of the Gzela. So now, in effect, you have two Gzelas over here. had it happened after the first Gzela, had the owner discovered who it was and taken him to Beis Din and demanded they give it back, then he would have given it back as is. And there we say, then we can say, Mishalom Kishas HaGzeva. Well, there we say, actually, then Harei Shalach HaFanecha, then he gives it back as it is without, and we don't take into consideration any increases or decreases in value. So therefore, so now it comes out that now he committed a second act of Gzela by drinking it or breaking it. Actually, there are chronim. We'll talk about whether it's really a matter of zelo, whether it's really a matter of that he's a mazik. So that's as far as that. On the other hand, itbar memela, but continues Rabba, if the barrel broke on its own, mishalom zuzah, then he would pay only a zuz. My timer hashdalei ovid lovelai midi, because after all, right now he didn't do anything to change the status of the barrel. So therefore, you can only be mechayev him to pay for the original gzela, for the first stage of the gzela, when he took it out of the other guy's possession. Well, Hadi Shaita Zuz or Hudashavya. At that time, it was worth only one Zuz, and therefore you can only be Machayev him for one Zuz. So in other words, what Rabbah is saying is, when there are two Gzelus within the same thing, then you can be Machayev him based on the second one. But when there's only one Gzela, and in this case there is, because it broke on its own, and therefore, yes, he can't return it, but that's not a new Gzela, that just makes it that now the original Gzela he's no longer able to return, therefore he's paying only according to the original value. The Ramban and a number of Rishonim bring up a point, actually, that still, a Gazlan is chayiv in Oinzin, a Shoyel is chayiv in Oinzin. So why is it with a Gazlan, he's chayiv only Kishas Akzela, whereas by a Shoyel, he would be chayiv according to the value when the Oinus happened. So they answer that a shoyl is actually when the onus happens, then at that point it's considered that it went out of the reshus of the owner. Up until that point, given that it's true that it's in the shoyl's house, but since the owner knows where it is and is obviously not miyayish from it because he fully owns it, he would be able to sell it while it's still in the shoyl's possession. He would be able to be makdish it. Therefore, it's still considered his until something actually happens there, as opposed to the gazlan. We learned in Baba Kama, after he stole it, the owner was no longer able to be makdish it because not birshus anymore. So therefore it's considered that already from when it's in his possession is already out of the reshus of the owner, and therefore if it broke by itself, again, if he himself broke it or drank it, then he's committing a second gzela. But if not, then we say that it goes according to the original gzela. And Acharonim discussed that in more detail, the ins and outs of that answer and of various other possibilities. Okay, so now that we have that background, the Gemara says, Tanan, let's look at our Mishnah and see whether it fits with that. We said in our Mishnah that Bishilul Omrim, that when the guy is Shalayach Yad, Bishilul Omrim Kashas Hotzah, that Bishilul says that he pays according to the time of Hotzah. Now, Hotzah can mean spending it, So Hotzah can mean spending it, taking it out of the world, or it can mean, or drinking it or whatever, or it can mean Hotzah, taking it out of the owner's house. So what does Bishilul mean? Obviously, the halacha is like Bishilul over Bais Shammai. So we have to figure out what Bishilul means by Hotzah. My kishas Hotzah. Ilem kishas Hotzah min ha'olam. Do you mean that he pays according to the time of what it was worth when he took it out of the world? In other words, he was shaleach yad b'kodin. The guy deposited him by him, let's say again, a barrel of wine, and he went and drank it. And Basil says that he's going to pay according to the value then. Well then, what's the case? Did it go up or down in value? Ibachoser, if it went down in value, why should he only have to pay that? Mi ikalamanda omar, would there be anybody who says that he pays according to the lesser value? We learned in Baba Kama. Everybody says that a gazlan pays according to the time of the gzela. So how can you say that if at the time he drank it, it was worth more, at the time when he did shlichus yad and drank it, it was worth more, and now, by the time we come to later on, it's going to be worth less. He's going to pay the lesser amount. Why? He should be paying according to shas gzela. Be yes, sir. You're talking about that it went up in value. Well, then, Haino Bais Shammai. Then, in effect, Bishilul is saying the same as Bais Shammai. It went up in value, and therefore he's paying the higher value. So, therefore, obviously, the word Hotzah in Bishilul cannot mean Hotzah as in using it up or drinking it. Elopshita Kishas Hotzah Mibes Bailim. In that case, obviously, then, Bishilul, when they say Kishas Hotzah, means how much it's worth when they took it out from the owner's house, meaning when they committed the Gzela. So the machlokas would be that Bais Shammai would say that if it went up in value, he's going to pay according to the higher value, and Bishilul is going to say that you go according to the original value when he took it out of the owner's house. So in this particular case, we're talking about a shaleach yad. So therefore, there's no taking it out of the owner's. We're not talking about taking it out of the owner's house. But after all, we mean, in other words, when he committed shlichus yad, when he did the gzela on this barrel of wine or whatever it is, by being shaleach yad. So now the problem with that is Lema Rabba da Amar Kabeis Shammai. In that case, then it would come out that Rabba, who's saying that there's a case where he's going to be paying the higher value, Kishas Haitzah Me'a Olam, is going to be Kabeis Shammai. He's going to be following this Shammai's opinion. And then since the halacha, as you all know, is like this Hillel, then why would Rabba be saying a din that would be valid only according to Beis Shammai? So the answer is Amalach Rabba, be yes or kula amale please. So Rabba is going to tell you no. When it comes to you're telling me that Haitzah in Beis Hillel's opinion must mean Kishas Haitzah be based by them, and therefore we have the question. Actually, no. Rabba can tell you that we can be talking about Kishas Haitzah Mina Olam, that there is a case where Beis Hillel is saying that we go according to how much it was worth at the time when he actually spent it and used it up. So like this, Rabba is going to say, yes, if Kula Amalek, when the value went up, everybody's going to agree, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, that he's going to have to pay according to what would have been the current value. Kipligi b'chaser. The machlokas would be only when it went down. Beis Shammai savri shlichus yad ena tzricha chisarin. Now we learned the other day when we had a machlokas on the question of whether the definition of shlichus yad requires any actual chisarin. Does it actually require that anything is missing from the that anything is actually missing from it. Now, the next Mishnah, Tosfos points out, the next Mishnah is going to talk about where Beis Shammai is going to say that even thinking about Shlichus Yad is enough to make him Chayev. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow, Beis Hashem, So Tosfos points out, yes, Beis Shammai, given that they hold that even Machshava would be enough to, and we'll talk about tomorrow whether Machshava means just Machshava, or whether it means Dibur. So in any case, Beis Shammai is going to say that yes, it doesn't require chisorin. As soon as he even thought about it, then already he's chayev. So therefore, so even when there's no chisorin yet, already then at that point he's committed gzela. Now at that point, if it still existed after that, he could still say harei shalach panecha, but now that he spent it, then he's going to pay according to the time when he actually used it. Therefore, you can say ki chaser b'rishusa d'idei chaser. So therefore, we can say when it went down in value, it was in his rishus already, because as soon as he did the shlichus yad, it in effect becomes his, because he committed zela at that point, and therefore he's paying according to the higher value that it was worth before. He could say, but now it's worth less. We tell him tough luck. According to Beis Shammai, as soon as you decided to use it, you already became chayav for it, and therefore the fact that it went down in value, that's on you. It's not on the original owner. Or Beis Hillel Sabri, Shlichus Yad, Tzricha Chisarin. On the other hand, Beis Hillel is going to say the definition of Shlichus Yad requires that something is actually missing from the Pikadin. So therefore, Ki Choser, so now when he only does Shlichus Yad, but when he only starts the Shlichus Yad process, but he didn't actually take anything yet, the Rishus of the Mari Choser, then it's losing value, it's considered to be in the Rishus of the owner, so therefore that would be why the Hillel is saying, so we don't have to say that Hotzah means, as we said at the top of the Omer, Hotzah mi base violin, that it means the time when he stole it, and then you'd have a question on Rabbah. Rather, the Hillel means he pays according to Hotzah, mina olam, he pays according to the value, how much it's worth, when he actually drank it or broke it, which is exactly what Rabbah is saying. On the other hand, if it goes up in value, then yes, everybody's going to agree that he has to pay according to what it's worth now. Okay. So in short, Rabbah's din can work according to Beis Hillel as well. So the Gemara says, Ela hodra amar Rabbah shlichus yad ena tzricha chisarin. Well, in that case, then, when we learned previously, we had the machlokas, whether shlichus yad requires chisarin. Tosfos points out, by the way, that in many places in the Gemara we have where it says Rabba, and we're not sure whether it's Rabba or Rava. Tosfos points out over here that here it has to be Rava. Anyway, so Rava had said previously that Shlichus Yad ain't a tzricha chisarin. He had said that the definition of Shlichus Yad doesn't require anything to actually be missing yet. So in that case, then, Lema Rava, Dama Kabis Shammai. Now we have the question on Rava. Is he going to say like Bis Shammai again? Halacha is like Bis Hillel. If we're saying the way we just explained, that Bis Shammai and Bis Hillel are only arguing on the question of Shluchas Yad, Shluchas Hisorin, then, and, or not, then it comes out. Anybody who says Shluchas Yad and it's Shluchas Hisorin is going to be like Bis Shammai. So the Gemara says no. Ela hoch of Mayaskinen. Rather, the case we're talking about in our Mishnah is not where he did Shlichus Yad in order to use the contents of it. And we talked about before that Shlichus Yad can be to actually use the contents of it. For example, it's a barrel of wine and he wants to drink the wine. Versus there can be Shlichus Yad with the actual object itself to use it for some other purpose. You mentioned Tiltal Alahavi Allah Gazalis. As we learned the other day, you can have where he handled it in order to use it as something to stand on to go get some birds from a high up nest. And therefore, over Shoyl, Shalimidas, Kamiflagi, so therefore we're going to understand the Machloikas, Bis Shammai Bis Hillel, is basically on the question of whether when he borrowed it without permission for this purpose. So Bis Shammai Sabri Shoyl Shalimidas Gazlan Havi, Bis Shammai holds that Shoyl Shalimidas is already considered a Gazlan. And therefore as a Gazlan, therefore he's right away higher for the value of it. So therefore, so again, when it goes down in value after he did that, then it's already considered in his reshus. The same way as we learned previously, that you can have a case where he moved the barrel and then it broke, where we had, we talked about over there, the same thing. To me, that he moved it looked so koi, that he moved it for his purposes, whether because he wanted to commit shlichus yad by actually drinking the contents, or whether because he wanted to use it to stand on as a ladder. Either way, we could say it's considered, at that point, it's considered a Gazlan, and therefore he's going to have to pay according to how much it was worth then, even though later on when it actually broke, or that it was worth less, he'd still have to pay according to the higher value, according to Bis Shammai. Or Bis Hillel Savi, Shoyl Shlamidas, Shoyl Havi. On the other hand, Bis Hillel holds such a person is considered a Shoyl, not a Gazlan, therefore, Pchi Choser, Rishos of the Mara Choser, so it's still considered to be in the Rishos of the owner when he uses it for that purpose. So therefore, you can't say that now he should be paying according to the moment that he did the Shlichus Yad. Instead, you're going to say that he's going to pay according to the lesser value that it was worth later on when it broke. So that would be another way of understanding the Machlokas Bis Shammai Bis Hillel. So again, first we thought that Bis Shammai Bis Hillel are arguing first we thought that they're arguing about what happens when he actually first took it out of the Balabas's house. Are we going to say you go according to that, or do you say you go according to the higher value that it was worth later when it was destroyed? And we said that doesn't work. And we said Rabba reconciled it with his din and said that no, the question was Shlichus Yad Tzricha Chisaron or not. Now we're saying a different answer, that they're arguing where there's no chisaron at all, but he was shoyl shlemi das, so is that enough to make him a gazlan or not? Well, the question is, again, elohodra amar rava, shoyl shlemi das, l'rabbanon, gazlan havi. Well, again, in that sugya, we learned that Rava had said, now when a person uses something of somebody else's without permission, then the chachamim hold he's considered a gazlan. The context is machlokas of the chachamim against Rabbi Yehuda, which we'll learn about in Baba Basra, Baz Hashem. But in any case, the point is that the chachamim against Rabbi Yehuda hold that a shoyl shalem yidas is considered a gazlan. By the way, you do have in Shulchan Aruch there are certain cases where that doesn't apply. You have first of all the din, for example, you're allowed to borrow somebody else's talus or tefillin as a one-time thing because a person would appreciate that a mitzvah is being done with possessions of his. On the other hand, for example, with sfarim, we said it's not like that. We learned in the second parak because sfarim wear out more easily. And even with this, you have to put the talus, you have to fold the talus and put it back where it was. You can't do this on an ongoing basis, etc. So there are cases where you are allowed to be shoyl shalem yidas because we figure that the person would appreciate that, but normally not. And you have even a case, God forbid, mentions in his Shulchan Aruch that you can have a case where a person knows the other guy likes me and he'll appreciate if I go and raid his fridge or whatever. You're still not necessarily allowed to do that without his permission. Anyway, but so again, if Rava says Shor Shlemidas for Rabbanan God won't have you, Lema Rava Damaka Bishamai, then you're gonna have to say that Rava is saying like the Shammai, because it comes out the way we just explained it. The way we just explained it is that only Beis Shammai holds that Shor Shlemidas God won't have you, and Beis Hillel would hold that he's not. If Rava himself is making the point in Baba Basra that the Chachamim against Rabbi Yehuda hold that Shor Shlemidas God won't have you, that implies that Rava understands that to be the position of Beis Hillel. But here we're saying it comes out that it's only the position of Beis Shammai. So the Gemara says no. No, rather we can say the machloikas is in our Mishnah when our Mishnah talks about choser v'yeser, we're not talking about where the value of the thing went up or down. Rather, we're talking about where there's an improvement in the thing that was stolen. So let's say we're not talking about a barrel of wine anymore, where there can be fluctuations in price. But rather, we're talking about, let's say, for example, it was an animal that was stolen, and it has shvach, because over time, it grows wool, it has babies. So now the question would be, what about that shvach? So, b'shamay sabri, shvach zela denigzal habi. B'shamay holds that all of that improvement in value, all of the shewings and the babies all belong to the nigzal. So therefore, in other words, when we say yoka b'choser of yeser, means, in other words, that he's going to have to return not only the actual animal itself, but all those gizzes of lovers. He's going to have to give all of those back. So therefore, Rashi says the chosser and the yeser of what Bishamai is saying. So we're talking about those things that he's gonna have to give back the wool and the babies respectively. In fact, Rashi explains that the word choser and the word yeser, in fact, are very advisedly chosen. The word choser suggests the wool which is sheared off the animal. The yeser suggests an animal that now became became pregnant. Marshall actually wonders why, after all, the same din would apply if the animal gave birth, and the same thing would apply if the wool was still on the animal. So Marshall says that actually you could actually say that chosra would mean that he stole it when it was pregnant or already covered in wool, and then he sheared it or it gave birth, and then yes, it would be the other way around, where the wool grew, where it became pregnant by him. Anyway, so that would be the machlokas then, therefore, what we do as far as those. So again, the Shammai Sabi Shvach Zeva Benigzal Havi, the Shammai holds that improvement, the wool or the babies is going to belong to the Nigzal, and therefore the Gazlan has to return all of those. Obisilo Sabi Shvach Zeva de Gazlan Havi, whereas Basil holds that's going to belong to the Gazlan, and therefore he doesn't have to give that back. In which case, it would plug to Dahani Tanoi, in which case, the Beshama Besoa having the same machlokas as later time. The Tani, we learn in a Braisa, Hagoiz also Rochel, the gozes of a Yolda. If a person stole a sheep, and later on, he sheared it or it gave birth, Meshalom Oisaves Gizeserves Woldeseha Divir Ameir. The mayor says he's gonna have to pay for the animal itself, as well as the shearings, as well as the babies. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Gzela Chazeres Beino, and Rabbi Yehuda says he's only going to have to give back the actual Gzela itself, the actual animal that he stole, and not those things. So therefore, Sebastian and Basil are having the same argument. Tosfos also brings up the point that you have where there's a shinui over here, but here he stole it. But Mazid, therefore, the mayor is going to say that even that shinui is not going to make a difference. And Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that it does. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he won't have to pay back the gizas of Lodis, and again, Bishilol would hold the same way. So Yoka b'chosser of yeser, then now we're saying Bishamai does not mean we penalize him according to the lesser or the greater value of it. It just means, in other words, that he's going to be paying back not only the animal, but also the chaser and also the yeser with the wool that was sheared off it, or the baby that it gave birth to, or the baby that it became pregnant with, or whatever. So that would be the way to explain the machlokas. And the Gemara says dekanami. In fact, we can see that from the wording of the Mishnah. Dekatani v'shamayim yuka b'chaser v'yeser. V'shamay had said he gets penalized by chaser and yeser. V'solam v'shaseitzah. Where the Sibyl says you go according to the shaseitzah. Now the point is the word chaser and yeser suggests, as we said, that it means something that changed in the animal itself, that you have something that was attached to the animal, something that wasn't attached to the animal and now is, or the other way around, or something, and that would be called chaser or yeser. Meaning, in other words, if it was a matter of they're just arguing about going up or down in value, like we assumed before, then instead you would expect it to use the words, instead of chaser and yeser, instead it could say the words zoil and yoker, which implies going up, which zoil means going down in value, and yoker means going up in value. But since instead Beshamai chose the words chaser and yeser, that implies that we're talking about something that actually changed in the body of the animal itself, namely that it grew wool or that it became pregnant with a baby, or that the wool was sheared, or the baby was born, or whatever. Okay, Shmami Nasa, the Gemara says that proves it. So that way we can understand the machlokas that way, and that way it doesn't require us to say that any of the dinim that we said so far, Rabba's din or Rabba's dinim, are only according to Bishrama. In fact, they can work according to Bishillel as well, because Bishillel is talking about, because Bishrama and Bishillel are talking about something else altogether.
So in essence, what are they talking each about?
So we're saying that Bishamai therefore is talking about. So Bishamai is talking about that now. If he stole an animal that did not have wool on it, let's say, and then it developed wool while it was by him, Bishamai says we're going to make him pay back the actual wool itself, even if he sheared it off afterwards. Where Bishillel is going to say that no, they're going to say that the wool belongs to him. Same thing with babies. So therefore, nothing to do with the question of going up and down in value, which is what Rabba was dealing with, and nothing to do with the question of Shoyl Shalemidas or Shlichus Yad, and it's Tzricha Chisarin, which is what Rabba is talking about.
So they agree on value, they disagree on Shvach? Is that what we're
saying? That's what Gemara is saying, yeah.
Okay. But Shvach is still value in a way.
Well, but it's a different kind of value. It's value that comes from something. Shvach is value where you have, it's not just a change in price. There's an actual new thing that grew over here that didn't exist before. As opposed to when we talked about a barrel of wine before, Rabba's case was talking about the same barrel of wine. It's just worth more now because it's not the season for wine or whatever.
So according to Beis Hillel, the Gazlan would not have to pay for the extra value, or he would? He wouldn't have to give that.
Right, it was saying that he wouldn't have to pay for the wool or the baby. He would be entitled to keep that for himself, which is the same as Rabbi Yehuda's opinion we said in the Braisa. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva and Kishasa Tzviya, Rabbi Akiva, we said, had a third opinion that says you go according to how much it's worth when the Nigzel takes the Gazlan to Beis Din, or in the case of our Mishnah, where we're talking about Shlichus Yad, when the Mafkin takes the Shomer to Beis Din and demands it back. So, by the way, within here, you have a Machlokas Rishonim, what would Rabbi Akiva say about the Gizus of Lodis? So Tosfos discusses over here that Bishamai would actually say, Tosfos comes out saying that Bishamai would actually maybe say there is actually, we do have to consider the going up or down in value. We might, in fact, according to Bishamai, require him to pay more or less based on that. Even Basilo agrees to a certain extent with that, but Bishamai is also talking about where there was a shinui. So Rav Akiva then would be saying that you go according to Shas HaTviya, strictly dealing with Huzal or Hukah, whether it went up or down in value, and according to Tosfos then, Rav Akiva is not really addressing the matter of wool or babies at all that we just discussed in the Gemara, but rather he's only dealing with the matter of going up or down in value. That's according to Tosfos, and then there are other Rishonim who talk about that according to the Akiva, maybe he would be kona all of them, or maybe he'd be kona only until Shas HaMod of Adin, and maybe rather they would belong to the Nigzel, whatever grew until the Nigzel took him to Beis Din, and then after that it would belong to him. So there's several different opinions on that. Anyway, the Gemara says, Omer of Yehuda Omer Shmuel, Halacha K'Rav Akiva. The Halacha is like Rav Akiva, that we don't go according to Shas Zela or Shas Haitzah, but rather we go according to Shas Tviya, when the guy takes him to Beis Din. However, he continues, Umurda Rav Akiva, Mokam Shiyash Edim. Rav Akiva would agree when there were Edim, that when there were Edim, how much it was worth at the time when it was stolen, then therefore he's going to have to pay according to that. My timer, why do Amakrala show who lo yit nenu bia mashmosay? The Pasuk says, when it comes to returning a Zela to the one to whom it belongs, he gives it on the day that he's guilty. So in other words, that implies that he pays according to the value of how much it was when he became Chayav. So where does a Tviya, where he takes him to Beis Din, and the Gazlan admits on his own that he's Chayav, then that's Yoy Mashmosa. Is the when does he become liable to pay is based on his own admission. Therefore, we can say Rav Akiva would say that he goes according to that. But given the Ikka Edim, and in this case where there are Edim, and the Edim are, so therefore, since there were Edim, and we know how much it was worth at that time, now who Shaita, who is Chayav by Ashma, therefore we can say at that point, in effect, is when he becomes Chayav to pay. So therefore he would be Chayav to pay according to the value of when he stole it and when Edim saw that happened. And within that, you have a bit of discussion of Rishonim, explaining how the Rif would understand over this are we talking about Shas Agzela, or are we talking about what happens? So what happens to any improvement or any shvach or whatever that takes place after? The Rashba brings, for example, that can mean that the Edim saw that it, let's say, didn't have wool at the time of the Agzela, so then he would just be paying like that time, rather than Kishas HaTviya, because then in effect we would consider that, that he has to pay according to that. So according to that's what it was. As opposed to when there's no Edim, then you would go according to how it was when he admitted, and at that point it's already covered with wool. They have different opinions of Rishonim about that point. However, the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Oshia Le Rav Yehuda, Rebbe Ata Omekain, Rav Oshia says to Rav Yehuda, and by the way, there's more than one Rav Oshia in Shas. Usually Rav Oshia in Shas is a Talmud of Rebbe and a Chaver of Rav Chia. This one obviously is a later one because it's a Talmud of Rav Yehuda. Anyway, he says, Rebbe I Ata Omekain, he's saying like that, that Rav Akiva agrees where there are Edim that it would be different than what he says in the Mishnah. Hachi Amr Rav Asi Amr Rav Yechanan. You should know, Rav Asi said, in the name of Rav Yechanan, follow Koyer Rav Akiva, follow Makam Shiyash Edim. Rav Akiva disagrees even when there are Edim, and says you go according to the time of Tviya, always, whether there are Edim or not. My time, Adra Amakra, La Shoholoi, then Abiyah Mashmose. Because again, the Pasuk says, on the day when he's guilty, on the day when he becomes liable to pay, Obey dinner who to come a chayvilei ashma, and after all, it's the Beis Din that makes him have to pay. It's not the fact that there were Edim; it's the fact that the Edim come to Beis Din and testify. Therefore, it wouldn't matter whether there are Edim or not. Either way, when the case comes to Beis Din is when we would go according to when we say that Rav Akiva would make him pay according to that value. Well, so the Gemara wanted to find out. So the Gemara now wants to find out who the halacha would be like in that. So Omalei Rav Zera, Rav Abba Bar Papa, Rav Zera says to Rav Abba Bar Papa, Ki Azlos Bahosam, when you go to there, when you're on your way to Eretz Yisrael, normally you would take a route that at that time the central yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael was located in the city of Tveria. So a person coming from Bovel, which is to the east of Eretz Yisrael, would usually go and enter Eretz Yisrael from the east. He would go by way of Syria or whatever, and he'd come someplace around the Kinneret or thereabout and go directly to Tveria. Here he tells Rav Abba Bar Papa, Akif Asuma de Tsur, go the long way around by the ladder of Tsur. The ladder of Tsur is the area that nowadays is called Rosh HaNikra. It's the border between Israel and Lebanon. There's an area over there with a very high pass above near the Mediterranean where it's like a ladder. The terrain over there is very mountainous and rugged, and you use that when you're going from Eretz Yisrael to Tzur, then you would be crossing over that. So now he tells, so that area was called the ladder of Tzur. So he tells him, go that long way around, go visit Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi, who lives in that area of Eretz Yisrael, ask him whether he's heard that whether Rabbi Yochanan says the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva or not. So we said that Rabbi Yehuda holds the halacha, Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, we want to know what Rabbi Yochanan has done it. So he went and asked him. So Rabbi Yaakov says, yes, the halacha is always like Rabbi Akiva. Now, my la'olam, what do we mean with that word la'olam? Amrav Ashi, he said, Rav Ashi explains, don't think like the way Rav Yehuda understood it to mean that only like the way Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, that there's a difference whether there were Edim or not, that Rav Akiva would hold this way only in the, what he says in the Mishnah, Kishas HaTviya, only when there are no Edim, but it's different when there are Edim. No, when he says La'olam, Aval Hecha Be'ika Edim Loi, that you would say when there were Edim, then no, then the halacha would not be like Rav Akiva, and Rav Akiva himself might not even hold like that. Inami, Ve'inami, or another La'olam can also mean you can be talking about a case where he put back the barrel where it was supposed to be originally, and then it broke. Where therefore, when he says halacha k'rav akiva la'olam, would mean even in a case like that. We learned the other day, machlokas Rav Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, whether hashavat tzricha das bailim, when you return a loss, when you return a stolen object, do you need to inform the owner that you returned it or not? Rabbi Shmuel had said no. Rabbi Akiva says yes. So now, let's say, for example, he had this barrel in his possession, and he had this barrel in his house. He was a shomer on it. He did shlichus yad on it. He moved it, as we said before, let's say, to go use it as a step ladder to climb up to get something. Then he put it back in its place. Then it broke. Then we would be saying, so now Rabbi Shmuel had said, in das bailim. Rabbi Shmuel had said you wouldn't need das bailim, and therefore it's not in his possession anymore. And therefore he would go back to being a regular shomer, and would be potter for what happened, because he's a shomer chinam and is potter for such things. So no, Rabbi Yochanan would want us to know, Kamash Malan, therefore when he says that even there, la'olam, even there, the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, to be in and das bailim, we do in fact require das bailim. So all of that is according to Rabbi Yochanan. On the other hand, but Rava Omar, Locha Kevesilo, Rava says that no, the bottom line with all of this, we had Shmuel saying, and we had Rabbi Yochanan saying that the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. No, says Rava, none of the above, the halacha is just like Vesilo, you go according to Shas Hotzar, that you go according to when he spent it. Or Kishase Tzom in Olam, as we said, when he used it up, when he drank it or broke it or whatever, is the point at which he would be chayev at which we're going to make him chayev for its value as of that time, not Shasa Tviya, like Rabbi Akiva says. And since we have a rule that from Rava, from the time of Abaya and Rava and on, the rule is halacha kebasroi, the halacha is usually like the later amuroi. Because they're from Rava's, from Abaya and Rava's times and on, they were starting to collect together the material for the Gemara, and therefore they knew of what all the earlier Amoraim had said, and they disagree with them. So in that case, that's how it is over here. The halacha is like Rava, which means in turn the halacha is like the Silla.